Welcome to the Fly Racing Racer X podcast with Jay Clark. Listen to his story starting at Wisco and all he does now and everything else. So thank you to the folks at Racetech for letting us record this podcast at Racetech, which you'll hear about. But also thank you to Racetech in general. Tell them you listen to Pulp MX. Tell them you listen to this show to get a deal from the folks at Racetech. And they got a new gold valve for 85s and the YZ65. Look into that thing if you are a mini dad. This thing's amazing. And it's a revalve in a box. So please check that out. And, of course, vintage stuff, modern stuff, motor work, all of it, racetech.com. All right, on to the show.
A Pulp MX Network production.
Welcome to the Fly Racing Steve Mathis Show, presented by Maxxis Tires, Renthal, and Motorsport.com on RacerXOnline.com. With your continuing gracious support of our sponsors, we're thriving at over 1,800 podcasts delivered with over 20 million downloads. Click the Amazon banner on Pulp MX to help us out. Donate via Patreon if it suits you. And as always, enrich your moto lifestyle by working with the sponsors who support us. The original Moto Podcast, featuring legends of the past, stars of today, season previews, race reviews, introspection, opinion, facts, and laughs. Here's the voice bringing it all to you, Steve Mathis.
Welcome, everybody, to another edition of the Fly Racing Racer X podcast. Again, remote edition. Always better to do these in person. And super stoked you guys are listening and downloading. Thanks again for all of the love for our sponsors like Fly Racing, flyracing.com. Code PULPMX to save with those guys, Cooper Webb, RJ Hampshire, Chance Hymus, right? All those guys wearing Fly Racing. Formula helmets, amazing. And the discount code will save you at flyracing.com. Women's gear, kids' gear, all of it available. RacerX online as well, of course. And don't forget, subscribe to RacerX magazine and read some cool articles. We'll tell you more about motorsport.com, Renthal, Maxxis, Brunt Workwear as the podcast goes on. But with me here is a longtime industry guy. He's done it all in industry. And I met him way back when he was the Wisco guy at the pro races almost every single weekend. And now he's got Dirt Bike TV, really successful with that. It's Jay Clark. What's up, Jay? How are you, man?
Doing good, man. I'm just really impressed with that ad read because I didn't see anything you were reading.
No, I've done this a few times. Yeah,
that is amazing. I don't think people realize the magnitude of that situation.
I've got a little practice, right, over the years. Thanks for doing this. And before we get too far into this, thank you for Racetech for hosting this. You live a little south of here.
Yeah.
I'm heading north of here.
You live way north of here.
We met a neutral position, yeah. And so thank you to Racetech for holding this for us, by the way. Thanks to those guys.
It's a mutual sponsor.
No, it is. Great guys, Racetech, yeah. Man. And I know that Checkers told me about the new gold valve for the 65s and the Super Minis that have a mid-speed now in them, and the YZ65 as well. So the Super Minis and 85s and YZ65 now have a new gold valve for these things that'll give you better plushness and everything else. They used to just have the compression, and now they got mid valve and rebound and everything else. So
one of the great things they do that people don't realize is very few suspension shops will touch vintage bikes. And when I say vintage, yeah, I'm even talking 90s.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of shops, I'm not going to name them, but yeah, if you call, they won't take it.
Yeah.
They just fight because there's,
well, they'll tell you to go to Racetech.
They'll tell you to go to Racetech.
They will.
So Racetech will actually tear into that 90s, 80s stuff, tear into it and find out what's wrong and missing and help you try to find what you're going to need to buy.
Because
most of this stuff, I build a lot of these older bikes, and on some of this stuff's just too worn out. Mm-hmm. Going to have to be hard anodized, the bodies, that kind of things. And then there's worn out. There's parts that are just unobtainable inside the suspension that can just cost your build. I tell guys, they started wanting to build an old bike. I tell them, first thing, tear that suspension apart, make sure that it's salvageable.
Yeah.
And then tear the engine apart and make sure the transmission's good because you can't buy transmission parts.
I found power valve parts too.
Yes.
Power valve parts, dude. Yeah.
I never would have guessed that power valve parts would become such a thing.
They're gold.
KX500, we're doing one of those, and the guys want a mint for any KX500 parts, parts that are, you know, discontinued.
I built an 89 CR125. It took me 3 eBay purchases to make one set of the HPP stuff. You know, it took me that long to do that. So Racetech.com, they just rebuilt my 86 YZ125 suspension for me. That's my new project bike, so I'm building that thing.
That's a great idea. You know who has an 86 that's not completed yet? It's almost done.
Okay.
Yeah, it's Ping.
Oh.
What are the chances of that? So, we, you know, with this newfound.
Well, we're talking now.
Yes.
Yes, yes. We're talking now.
There could be a race. Now, he was a pro, you know, yeah. But
he's got a really bad knee.
Yes. He's getting a knee replacement.
Oh, he is.
Yeah, which he's way too young for, but he's getting a knee replacement.
Yeah.
So if he does the race maybe first out of the chute of.
No, I want to race him with the bad knee.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, yeah, yeah. Without the knee, maybe I got a shot.
So it's so random that you guys would both. Yeah. He picked this bike, and it is. It was pretty terrible to start with, but it looks amazing right now. And Mitch just tuned it.
Oh, yeah.
Just got the jetting and everything set. And
yep.
The carburetor.
See,
was
I'm doing all that myself. Okay, I'm the mechanic. I'm not just giving it to people like Ping is. I'm doing that all myself. I did buy a brand new carb from Sudco because I don't want to rebuild carburetors. So I just bought a brand new PWK. Yeah. You know, and I'm just like, hey.
And did you get it to fit well?
I haven't done that yet. I'm not that far along.
That was our problem.
Okay.
We couldn't find one that fit well. We weren't gonna have to make spacers and this and that.
Oh boy.
So we backed off of that, and I got the stock one rebuilt, which was a chore. Finding the gaskets.
Yeah, yeah,
is a chore. So I was able to do it.
Okay. Well, listen, there's lots to talk to you about for sure. But thank you to Racetech for making this happen and giving us a neutral party spot to do this podcast at. And I guess while we're at it, let's just do Maxxis.com, PRMX, Mitchell Harrison running the Maxxis MXST tires, mid to soft to mid versions that Jeremy McGrath helped develop. So. Maxxis tires, great mountain bike tires as well. Thank you to Maxxis.com. Please check those guys out if you're in the market for a high-end tire. I know, Jay, you deal with the Dunlop guys, but Maxxis tires, great guys. And then also thank you to Motorsport.com. That's where I get my OEM parts from for this 86. And I wish Yamaha would make more shit available, so keep me off eBay. But Motorsport.com, and go there, and great online shipping. It's everything over $79 is free, I think. And, of course, motorsport.com, they support the industry in a lot of ways. So thank you to those guys and, of course, Fly Racing. All right, Dirt Bike TV, Jay, is sort of your brainchild. You've been around the industry forever. I've asked a few people about your Dirt Bike TV and everything else, and the consensus is you're crushing it. You're doing a good job. People are really liking this thing that you're doing on YouTube. Now, I've watched it on Instagram only, so forgive me. I haven't done my... Yeah. True homework, but talk about Dirt Bike TV.
So the main purpose was, as if I started before there was internet, mm-hmm. just like you. So when I started in 93, I worked for Weisco. So that's when I started. And I was able to convince Weisco that they needed someone out west here to represent them. They didn't mm-hmm. have anybody. Because back then it was only magazines, as everybody talks about. We only had magazines with Motocross Action, Dirt Bike.
Yeah.
Then came Racer X a little bit later. And Dirt Rider. You would deal with these magazines. And Weisco, being in Ohio, just had no – they were out of sight, out of mind. So one of the things I was able to create when we started that was helping create that. So once that kind of progressed and we moved into this age we're in now, I decided we need to add a little bit of extra something so that I'm not just this old magazine guy that just does mm-hmm. magazine builds. Mm-hmm. And my son and daughter both were able to help on some of that stuff, you know. The
technical end of stuff?
Yeah. And I've gotten a lot better. You know, I can post all that stuff. And definitely Instagram, which also goes to Facebook now, because there's lots of old guys who don't have Instagram. Mm-hmm. They just use Facebook.
Yep.
I'm not good on the Facebook. I have no idea, really, other than going to Marketplace to find parts and bikes.
Right,
okay.
Right.
But so all of our stuff will go there. So one of the biggest things we do is help people who aren't around moto. So the simplest things that you take for granted on setting – one of the funniest – there's people that just don't know some of the most basic stuff, adjusting the chain, proper ways to do things, just the most simplest things that you take for granted.
Mm-hmm.
But being around the industry for 35 years or whatever, you just see stuff and you're around it. I stop at race shops and I'm at the races over the years. You just learn stuff. And, you know, and I didn't have any formal training at a...
This is Jason Wygant's rant, by the way, because he's useless when it comes to mechanics. You tell him the basic stuff, he's like, well, my dad never... wasn't into, so how was I supposed to know this?
That's always
what he says.
No, and it makes me sick almost, the neglect that he has, the discare of his machines.
Yeah.
Like, it just makes me crazy.
Yeah, no.
Nothing hurts me more than somebody disrespecting this machine, you know.
Yeah,
like
right.
I do love dirt bikes and I like that we can help people solve things. And one of the biggest things we do, believe it or not, you're gonna laugh, I get about 20 plus emails a day. Whether it's just drawings for our tire stands,
mm-hmm.
we have tires, we send them the drawings so they can make their own.
Okay.
People love this, man, because to build a heavy duty tire stand, it's too expensive to make one. We've already checked into it. You can't make one heavy duty to where you could ship it and all that.
Yeah.
And so people just make their own. They got a welder buddy. We send them the drawings. They go make one
Okay.
They're all over the world. That's one of the biggest things we get. And then we have lots of people asking us questions. some of the most basic stuff, but we try to walk through it and help them. And yeah. So that's really what appeals to people, is we're able to help them with some basic questions that, you know, more than anything, gives them confidence to go do it on their own.
Yeah. So will you have I should be a better host and have watched this. Do you have an episode of like, here's how you do a chain of sprockets?
Oh, yes.
Here's how we do a tire. Do you have a, yeah, is that what it is?
Tons of stuff like that. Just, we have ton, and so we have slow speed tire change. So I try to go as slow as I can, which is really hard. I have a blindfolded tire change.
Okay.
Completely blindfolded, and I change the tire. Okay. So things like that, like, because when I do the blindfolded one, I have to go really slow. And I do it on an 18-inch wheel with a, you know, so it's a little easier, you know, so it's not like it's, you know, that hard. But we try to do things like that, and so we have lots of videos like that. But the majority of it is social media, and then because YouTube, especially nowadays, is very hard to really get a lot rolling with. Most of our content is – there's nothing fancy about it in the sense it's going to come up for years. You know, it's evergreen.
Yeah.
It's
gonna,
5 years from now, someone's going to chain and sprocket. Yep. We have a brand new chain and sprocket video coming out in the next week or two. And – where I go through every type, you know, a regular chain, an O-ring chain, different ways to break the chain using this, a grinder, if you use a Motion Pro tool, you know, a chain breaker, all the different ways, you know.
Such basic stuff for you and I. But.
And I actually weigh the chains, you know, to show them, hey, here's a regular chain, here's one, you know, a X-ring chain, an O-ring chain, those types of things. So people appreciate that kind of stuff. And then a lot of people who live, especially east of out west here, when they live out east, a lot of times finding a used bike can be very difficult. We have videos talking about things to be cautious for and how to find a good used bike, right? You know, not buying it from an X-Racer is number one, right? Especially a 250F that's got, you know, 80 hours of a kid. Okay. We go over those types of things. Well, I get people, they'll send me their ads from their local, and I'll give them my opinions on those ads. I go, they send me three ads, and I go, hey, that last one probably looks the best. I think it's probably maybe $1,000 high. Prices are way higher back out east than they are out here. Out here, things are way less money. From here to Vegas, way better pricing on used bikes, you know. So those are things you learn. And so if people like when you can help them on that kind of stuff.
How many subscribers do you have?
On Instagram, like 390,000.
Okay. And YouTube?
And YouTube, like 170,000.
Okay, awesome. So I know what we do for subscribers. So this is a nice chunk of revenue for you. Like, well, this is what you do.
It keeps everybody going. Because I don't do, like, the YouTube videos. I don't edit anything.
Yeah.
I've never edited. I don't shoot anything. So my son helps, Spencer.
Yeah.
He's Dirt Bike TV too.
Okay.
Very simple, easy to find, right? and then Rado has Dirt and Iron.
Okay.
He's a friend of mine, Slovakian guy. Yeah. He lives out by Kuya.
Okay.
A really good dude. So he helps me on a ton of videos. And then Donnie Bales, who produces our little moto show where we try to answer our moto show. We won't have any riders on. We don't have any industry people. We just stick to tech questions.
Yep.
We will have the occasional mechanic on, like we've had Jade and different mechanics on.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about just dirt bike things.
Doing a race bike or something.
And things that relate to regular people, you know, when they're tuning their and maintaining their own bike.
Right.
So that's the stuff. And so with the help of those people, we're able to get out a lot more content. And then we kind of break even on what we bring in to pay for all that. And it works out pretty good.
Yeah, it sounds like it's doing really well. And again, like, things that you and I may take for granted, but there's so many people out there that just want to, you know, look at YouTube. And I mean, I do it. I had to reprogram my remote garage door.
First place you're going.
YouTube. And then I looked at it. It didn't work, by the way, but I watched it and I'm like, okay, like, that's what they do, right? And so they find you and they find Dirt Bike TV and they're like, oh, shit, this guy's got a lot of help here.
So it's nice that you can provide that little outlet. And then, but our still main thing I do is build project bikes for magazines, you know, with the magazines, online people building project bikes, and then supporting the other media partners out there, Motocross Action, Dirt Bike, Racer X, Kiefer, you know, those types of companies, Ping. We're supporting them with whether it's Dunlop tires or products they need with Pro-X or Weisco.
So you partner up with 6, 7, 8, 10 brands.
Right. We got all those.
And you're like, hey, give us your bike and we will build a project bike that works well.
Yeah. Works for you. Yeah. And then also if they're doing their own stuff, we'll just, hey, you guys need chain and sprockets for your bike? Here's some Pro-X stuff, that kind of thing. So we're able to help in a lot of ways. And we try not – and as far as Dirt Bike TV, we try to stay just mechanic focused. And we're not really competing – we don't go into Anaheim to learn about the new 2020. We're not talking about the 2026 season, even though we kind of, you know, we are huge fans of racing. We love it, right? But there's so much content out there. What you have and what so many people cover, no one needs any more of race coverage, right?
I've told this story a few times, but in 2010, RacerX let me go. I went to Transworld, and Maeda got some money from Bike Bandit.
And some of those videos are still out there.
Yes.
So I find some.
I did these tech tips for Bike Bandit. I screwed one of them up, by the way. I still feel bad about that. But I do these tech tips for Bike Bandit 15 fucking years ago. And like every once in a while at 2024, a guy will be like, I loved you in those Bike Bandit videos. One guy was like, what are you doing now? Like he had no idea. He just stopped me in Anaheim. And like, I'm just like, these things live forever. They just keep going on and on and on. And it's amazing to me, but I did them so long ago and people are still like, I learned how to wash a bike or something. And I'm like, okay. Like, I remember knocking those out in the Carlsbad offices down at Transworld.
He doesn't know you had 600 shows on your...
No. Nothing about Racer X, nothing about Pulp MX. What are you doing now? The guy said to me. I was just like, holy shit. So, yeah, this stuff is evergreen.
Yeah.
And it lives forever. And it goes on and on. So, So I was thinking I knew you did the magazine stuff and I knew you did the project bike builds, but I was thinking a lot of your income comes from YouTube and Dirt Bike TV, but not really.
No. I think the majority is the companies, the brands we work for.
Yep.
And representing them.
Yeah.
And the Dirt Bike, the main point of it was to help just give some extra coverage to our builds.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah. Because
when they do a magazine story or we do a YouTube video on a bike build, no one can show, you can't have, 30 pages of magazine coverage. Okay.
Yeah.
So they can't show. So it's nice to be able to show, we're putting in brake pads. And if we're going to put, especially internal parts, we're putting a piston in this bike.
Yeah.
Well, they can't show that in the magazine story. So it's nice when we can show some video clips of it. We're getting some extra coverage for Weisco or Recluse or whoever it is in these builds as we go along.
So. Oh, interesting. So, and I know also great benefit that you have is these fucking racers don't want to change tires.
No.
So you are like, hey, you can probably knock out a tire in 10 minutes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're like, I'll change the tire for you. And you got to use a Dunlop and all that. So you have a nice edge because you know these racers are useless. So that's great for you. Second part is, at times I know that this is the brand you've built where these magazines, because you do such a good job and you work with great companies, right? But I know other people in industry get frustrated because magazine guys use you and your brands and you do a great job. And other companies are like, fuck, like another Jay Clark build. Like, and it's all the brands you work with, Recluse, Weisco, Dunlop.
And we fought that from day one. I've been fighting that.
Well, what I'm saying, though, is you do such a good job that these people are going back to you.
Right.
And so you've created a nice little niche here. So I'm asking on the other end, like, how much do you have other outside brands being like, hey, Jay, like, Max's Tires, I know you do Dunlop, but, do you have that?
We definitely have
companies. I feel like, though, you've stayed with the same dudes forever.
Right. Most of our brands are 20 years plus.
Yeah.
With FMF and Dunlop and Weisco coming back. I did leave Weisco for a bit.
Yep.
But
we'll get to that.
But so having these long relationships is just, it's just awesome.
Yeah.
It's just, and you know the way Moto is in our community here. If everybody's happy, I try to over deliver on anything that I'm doing and they're all happy. And I've been real blessed to be able to keep that going.
You do such a good job that other brands get pissed.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Which is a compliment in a way.
Right. And I've heard that and it's like, hey, you guys can go hire a guy.
Yeah.
To be out west here and to go get in the face of these guys. But most of them don't want to put their money where their mouth is. They just want to pay for advertising and then have them, go put a piston in
Or whatever. Kiefer is not putting a high compression piston in.
No.
Sorry, he's just not. Pingree is not, putting a mousse on. Like, and so you're there for that, and then the companies in return get a great return on their investment. So, in a way, it's a compliment to you that you've been able to sustain this.
I appreciate it.
How is the magazine business on your, you're just helping these guys out, but I work for Racer X we don't do the bike builds per se. Kiefer does some, Ping did them before, but that's not their bread and butter. But how is the magazine test business as a whole? Like, how do you feel?
Man, I feel, I still love magazines, right?
Yeah.
When they come in, I love to look through them. Is it dated? Because I think 10 years ago, we would have guessed they'd all be gone by now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now we're down to, say, half, right, of print magazines. I hope they don't go away. I still like print magazines. I think it's great. Now they have to work twice as hard because they have to keep up a website.
Mm-hmm.
They have to keep up social media.
Yep.
And they have to do some YouTube. So they're doing maybe three times more work with the same staff in most cases. So a lot of these print magazines are in a tough spot.
Yeah.
I still like it. I don't know how long it continues, and I think we're down to a place where the two high torque ones are family owned, and then as Davey owns Racer X, so he's able to when it's in those cases, but when it's private equity or somebody that owns it,
yeah,
it's not going
to
make
sense. Which is like, I think what happened to Dirt Rider.
Dirt
right?
Rider or
yeah.
Transworld.
Yeah.
Those things, those titles went away because mm-hmm. there's just not the dollars and cents to make it work.
Yeah. Pretty competitive business, though, the magazine guys.
Oh, gosh. Still, right? Yeah,
I know I'm buddies with the Yamaha guys. I'm an ambassador for them. And I always laugh my ass off because they take these shootouts so seriously.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, guys, it's the wrecking crew at High Tor or at Glen Helen. Nobody cares. But, dude, they do care.
They
and
do
people
care.
People do base their buying things on these shootouts. And I'm always like, man, the guy in West Virginia is looking at Glen Helen as what bike he should buy. But they do. And the magazines care. Yeah. I should say the OEMs care. Yeah.
And I, last year, I did a fun little thing at the end of the shootouts.
Okay.
I made a spreadsheet, and I put everybody in order, all the different shootouts,
okay.
the five or six shootouts.
Yep.
And then I put, because they all had, not all, but there was a lot of different winners.
Mm-hmm.
So they got first, second, third, and then I would tally them up, and then came up with a
different, an ultimate ranking.
Ultimate winner
of
all the things.
Yeah.
And so that kind of got a few people upset.
I was going to say that politically, yeah. that's not great.
It was good for some and not good for others, and so it was just
did you do
fun.
That on YouTube TV?
Like, I posted it on Instagram.
Oh, Instagram, yeah.
Yeah. It was kind of fun to do it. And then I was surprised, like, Yamaha and Honda, people paid attention. They're writing me, hey, where'd you come up with these numbers?
Yeah.
And they're
asking me,
like,
no,
for the data.
Listen, I can't believe how serious they take these shootouts. And I'm always like, but look, Kiefer's got a great idea. He wants to do one back east,
yes.
and I totally think that's a great idea. He's one of my best friends.
Yes.
But I think it's a great idea. Yes. Dude, you got to ride these things around.
And it would be nice to know how much of a different result he gets. Because he says he plans on doing it east and west.
Yeah.
If he does it east and west, it'd be great to go, okay, this let's just make it up. Maybe the Yamaha wins it here, and then maybe the Kawasaki wins it somewhere else. Okay, that would be interesting to know if you really see a difference.
Mm-hmm.
Or if it's really close to the same result.
And for me, too, the shootout stuff has lost a bit of its luster because, look, Triumph and Ducati coming in is awesome. But the bikes are so damn close. They're so good.
Right.
Like, not from our day where the bikes did suck. There was a shitty Suzuki or a shitty Cowie or whatever, right? These things are all awesome now. And that's not a bullshit answer. They're great bikes.
I firmly believe that. And for myself, I've ridden all the bikes. I try to ride them all. They're all fine.
Yeah.
All fine. We have an RMZ 250. I'm finishing for a project right now with Kiefer. We're going to shoot it with Racer X. And it's a great bike.
Yep.
And we do switch the shock out to a 250 shock.
Oh,
we
you did? You took that to take the BFRC off?
Yeah. So that comes off, and we do, and Twisted has a good map.
Yep.
My main helper kid races it all year. He put almost 100 hours last year on the one, and they're bulletproof.
Yeah.
So that's one thing I'll say about the bike is it's really bulletproof. It's nice when you have a bike you can put that much time on.
No, they're all good, man. So to me, a shootout, like, hey, what's the retail price? What's financing like? What's your dealer like?
Right.
You know, how close is it to your house? Like,
those are great things to consider.
Yeah, yeah. Like, and so if you want a Cowie, you know, I will say I rode the Ducati, and I really thought the Yamaha was a way better bike. That's just me. I have a lot of time on a Yamaha, but I wasn't stoked with the Ducati. But it's still a first year bike, and they'll improve. But the suspension, suspension was way soft for me. But I can get that done at Racetech.
I was surprised how good the Triumph was out of the box.
Yeah,
like a Triumph 250, and I'm comparing it to a Yamaha 250 and some other bikes the same day, and I'm like. This is incredible what they did out of the gate.
What do you work with? Like, again, you do these project bikes for the magazines and you help them out. What do you work with? Try not to be biased here, Jay. But,
yeah.
What's a product that really works? That when you drop it in, any bike, any kind of model, the people are like, this thing's good.
I just heard this on one of your shows. Somebody answered this is ECUs.
Yeah.
You have on a current four stroke, prime example, my son, I asked him last night, we were talking about this. We have a YZ450FX, a new one, and it's a great bike.
Yeah.
It really is a cool bike. And Honda makes a really good CR450 RX, too. We had that one last year, and we have one of those right now as well. But the Yamaha, we really like this one. And we've tuned a bunch with the Yamaha tuner, right?
Mm-hmm.
Made some great maps, tried a bunch of different things. We made it slow as we could, which is really cool. You can do that with a tuner. It made it really too fast and did all a bunch of stuff. But once we put a Vortex in from Jamie, put one of those in, it was just like...
Twisted, Jamie.
There was no reason to try anything else.
Yeah.
Like, we were done.
Yeah.
Like, there was no trying another map. There was no switching between maps. It was like, this is perfect. It runs... It's just incredible what it does to throttle response and to just feeling connected to the rear wheel. So when Twisted maps... And one of my bikes is... I have a KTM 250 there right now. It's going to get a dual injector.
Mm-hmm.
And he's dynoing it. And one... People ask me, like, well, this guy, and I don't compare people because when people ask me about tires.
Tuners, you mean?
Yeah, tuners.
Yeah, people,
one of the things I'll say when people ask me about stuff that I don't know, like, say, tires, I go, hey, I'm a Dunlop guy. I only run Dunlop. Yeah. Here's what we run in the Dunlop.
Yeah, range.
For what you're saying, for where you're riding in southern Utah or whatever you're riding. Oh, here's what I would run. Okay. On a Dunlop. I go, I can't compare it to anything else. And then people go, why don't you compare it? Well, I don't.
Yeah,
and I'm not going to. Yeah. So here's what I'll compare it to. And then you could check the equivalent on another tire brand if you want. And with tuners, I see firsthand. I'm at Jamie's shop once a week. I go by there usually. And I see firsthand how long he spends on the dyno. And he loves, it's not just about making power, but usable power and that it runs so clean. And coming from two strokes, I was a guy that said I was going to buy three or four CR250s in the crate and leave them. You know, I was never going to ride a four stroke. I was going to stockpile these.
Did you do this?
No. Because once I got on a, it was around 04, I got a modified. Josh Grant was riding with Tom Morgan.
Yeah.
Okay. And he had a modified CRF250. He was really fast. I got on one of those and I'm like, whoa, this is awesome.
This is all I need.
I started transitioning slowly to four strokes. And by 05 or so, 06, you know, had a modified CRF250 that was just like, now the downside was kickstarting it and then keeping that carburetor dialed.
Yeah.
You know, when it was good, but when it wasn't.
They had those big cars back then too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The 04, 05 had the bigger carb. And then if you messed with it, if you put a cam in it, you did anything. Remember, you know, the FC bikes pushing them behind the starting gate before the Supercrosses because they wouldn't start. So that was always a hassle with a decomp getting them. So after all those headaches of jetting and all that, when you have a perfectly tuned four stroke, it's just a game changer. And I love it. And that, to me, that's just the best use of your money. If you have a current four stroke, is spending it on ECU tuning.
Well, I've said that. Exhaust, ECU, and fuel.
Yeah.
Go racing. It's not bad.
No.
I'm getting a get for my bike, my 450. I want to try it out. I'm going to talk to Jamie a little bit. Yeah. I want to see what it does. Like, I've never really had an ECU. Yamaha loans me the bike for the year, and they would prefer me to have standard ECU. But I'm going to try this get just because I want to see what it does, you know?
And it does it has more. One of the things I think people like about the get is that there's more things you can play with and toy with. I'm not a person who wants to toy and play with things, especially at the track. I have limited time to ride.
Yep.
I like to go ride, and then I'm usually leaving and running two or three errands on the way back, you know, for work.
Who's a couple of the test riders that you've worked with over the years, and it could be even guys out of the industry now, that you really admire, respect, you know, are good, know what they're talking about, and good dudes and all of that? Is there a couple that... Well, come to mind?
I worked with Ping a lot. Yeah. You know, he's at RacerX and Kiefer now. And I do think Kiefer puts a lot of effort into what he's trying to do and tries to be real legitimate. I do give him grief because there's many times I want to go over to his bike, like at Glen Helen when he's not looking, and unbolt like the head stay. Like take one of the head stages off the bike, right? And see if he notices when he comes back and go, hey, was that pretty good? And just see if he notices, you know. So that's one thing. I still am cautious because I still think as much as we talk about like, you know, engine hangers and this and that. Like, even when I run some stuff, there, you know, suspension and an ECU, okay, I can tell those things.
Yep.
But there's many other things that are really hard to tell. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing there. Yep. And then as far as, but like working with those kind of guys, even working with Jody over the years, you know, I've had my ups and downs with Jody.
Yeah. He's, as everyone has.
But he's always been pretty good to me and a good dude. And now Josh Mosman's been picking up right in there, and he tries to be pretty thorough on a lot of
stuff. Is Jody back on a bike yet or no? I know he's got some illness.
Not much. Not much at all. And he really, but he truly does love the sport. You know, he really does. I think his heart's in the right place at how much he loves the sport.
Yeah.
And he wants what's best, even though some people will look at it like, oh, he's bashing on this or that.
Yeah.
It's not. But I
would love for him to do one of these. He won't. I've asked him. He doesn't really like me. But I would listen to one he did with Ping or Kiefer or anybody. I think
he
should.
I don't think it's not just that he doesn't like you. I think he doesn't want to do one of these with anybody.
I know, but like, why?
Yeah,
Jody. I mean, you're literally a motocross history.
No, we've talked about that, and I've even talked about it with Josh. Is like he's got all this history and legacy stuck in his brain that's going to be gone in the future, and no one's going. It'd be nice if it was all recorded because we talked about videoing it all and different.
One of the coolest things I did was I did Jim Hale. I talked to Jim Hale for 2 hours, and he's gone now. Jim was such a great businessman, great mind, and I love the fact that I did a podcast with Jim Hale. I mean, he's a legend, right?
Yeah.
So, anyways.
Jody did the Brock, let Brock buy, spelled wrong, you know, by your former boss.
Yeah, yeah.
I think we all have a similar opinion of, yeah.
But he did get on the Walk of Fame or something. He just got the Walk of Fame. As far as your business model, as much as you want to get into it, do these companies pay you a set amount and then supply product?
Yeah, most of the companies I work for, like as basically an employee, I am.
You're 1099. And then they just say, hey, Jay.
Here's what you're doing.
What do you need for parts?
Right.
And then you say, I'll get you in this magazine and this website.
Yeah,
and
we just,
you know,
yeah. And we try to have reasonable expectations. Here's what we, yeah. And they, you know, the nice thing is I'm a known entity as far as they can just,
yeah.
You can Google J. Clark Motocross or Dirt Bike, and yeah. There's pages and pages of what we've done. It's right
so
there.
I imagine, like, with the Dirt Bike TV thing and in what you're doing, because almost every time I come down here to ride, I see you
yeah.
at Glen Helen or whatever. And you're like Kiefer, right?
Yeah.
You seem like you're wide fucking open.
Yeah.
Are you like, are you still?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how old you are, but like.
Yeah, you know, I'm 56.
Yeah. So like, you're still, it seems like a lot. You do a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And I try to. And it's harder. My son lives up in Utah. He's not around. So I don't have as much. It's harder to find help,
mm-hmm.
you know. Yeah. And I've had people move away, pass away that I used to work with a lot. And
yeah.
so that makes it tough. So I do go wide open. My wife's a huge help on a lot of. You know, office stuff, different
yep.
things, you know, at home. So that helps a ton. And I just try, sometimes I bite off too much, mm-hmm. trying to do too much
yeah.
and just try to keep it within reason as far as what I'm able to yeah. go after. And most companies are pretty happy with, I mean, I think all the companies I deal with are all real happy with what I do because they all
yeah, well,
are still
I just,
around.
I just told you, yeah, you've been doing yeah. it for so long
yeah.
and other people get mad at you that I think you've been doing a good job.
Yeah.
And we just talked about how good the bikes are, but what's a model that really comes alive with some mods?
There's a few bikes I love right
yep.
now. KTM has a 350 XCF, which is their
okay.
off-road
yeah,
bike.
Off-road,
and,
yeah.
and so from 24 on, it comes with dual spring closed cartridge forks, so no more air fork.
Yeah.
And that fork should come on the motocross bike. No
yeah.
idea as to why it doesn't
right.
yet, but it doesn't. So that fork's on the 350 XCF. That's our favorite bike. Overall, one of the best bikes you can buy if a guy – I have a lot of guys write me who are going to ride trail and track
mm-hmm.
wherever they live. And that's one of the best overall bikes because they're stuck between 250, 450.
Yeah.
Kiefer
loves the motocross one. Loves
yeah.
it. Yeah.
Yeah. The 350 SXF, I've had a few of them
mm-hmm.
and I still feel more comfortable on a 250 on the track.
Okay.
I was never very anything more than a novice. I'm yeah. a lifetime California speed novice, right? So I would be like B level.
Which means you're B level, yeah, back
else.
East.
So lifetime. So, and then when it comes to 250Fs, I just love. The Yamaha stock,
mm-hmm.
Yamaha 250 is amazing stock, you know, comparing those. And then the KTM bikes with the caveat of I switch the forks out
yeah.
to KYB conversion or 6500.
But yeah. on the XCF, you like that fork. That fork.
Love it.
That fork
the stock is
yeah,
it's
yeah.
amazing. And I've
right.
talked to like, you know, to Rob here at Race Tech, for instance,
mm-hmm.
and we go, hey, with that stock, and we've compared them to the KYB kit versus the stock. They're so close, you can't. I go
on the dyno. You mean?
Yeah,
yeah.
And in,
yeah.
he's made me both sets,
oh, okay.
and you can't hardly tell the difference. So I would say if yeah. you're buying a 24, 25, 25. Sorry, yeah, 20, 24, 25, 26, 350 XCF,
yep.
the XCF range. It comes with those new clothes.
Could you bolt those on an X?
Yes,
you can. Yeah.
You can put them right on an
yeah,
SXF.
Yeah. So if you can find a set somewhere,
yeah.
Like,
and we have one set of those, and we have a few sets of
mm-hmm.
conversion. So that's one thing with KTM guys. I have a shed full of. Forks, you know, take off. So I have the old air forks sitting there.
Yeah.
Because when you sell the bike, you don't sell it with those forks on because you're not getting the money out.
Yeah,
of it.
Yeah.
So you put the air forks
yeah.
back on, and then you sell it.
My brother got a set of spring stuff from Brosho,
yeah.
used, and he loves it. He took the air off his 350,
put
on the spring stuff, and he's like, "This is amazing."
Right.
Yeah. He's
and
like,
it changes
this.
The whole bike.
Yep.
And
but it's an older one, not the one on the new. I don't know if it's the
yeah.
same, but
yeah, he could have got some new one, but
yeah.
they're so good with the spring fork
mm-hmm.
and. So that helps even out those bikes. I think the KTM brand bikes would finish a lot better in the shootouts against the Yamaha if it had spring fork.
If it had
stock.
Spring fork,
yeah.
Which they've been getting hammered in every shootout for years about their dumb air fork.
Yeah.
What's going on?
I think it culminated when things got so big and they had started having those financial problems.
Mm-hmm.
I think they just couldn't back out of who knows how many thousands of air forks they had sitting there.
They have, yeah.
They couldn't just throw them
yeah.
away.
Yeah.
You know, because that they would have had to scrap them all, and so they some of these lower quantities, like these XCF models,
mm-hmm.
they have a 450 XCF, also
yeah.
a 250, and those come with those same forks that are way better.
Yeah,
and they don't.
I've talked to guys like Bill Orr, who worked at Honda back in the day, and now he's at KYB, and Ross Maeda, and sometimes the OEM's decisions are literally like, oh, we got a lot of those. let's put those on, like the black rims on a Yamaha. Like, I'm guessing, and I asked somebody, and they said, yeah, we have a lot of black rims. Because the black rims, I have the anniversary edition, which is white and red.
Right.
And it comes with the black rims, and I'm like, what are you guys doing? And they're like, we got a lot of black rims. So I think the production stuff, a lot, like you just said, we got a lot of these stuff. We got to put it on.
Right. And it comes down to financial
right.
sense. And now that they're getting bailed out and things are going forward,
yeah.
I just can't see them in any light talking to some people that are investing in them and going, hey, we need to throw away this millions of dollars of
yeah.
fork sitting here
and
come up with these outlines. I don't think it's going to go over.
Jay Clark here on the Fly Racing Racer X podcast show, code PulpMX to save at Fly Racing. Cooper Webb, RJ Hampshire. I guess RJ Hampshire showed up at the rider intros today with a broken wrist or a wrist issue again.
Oh,
so
bad
deal for RJ. And then Jay Clark here. All right, so let's get in the time machine a little bit. I met you when you were the Wisco guy. I was some greasy privateer kid. You were walking around with Wisco stickers in the back pocket.
Yep.
And Wisco's on my pulp show, and I talk about it all the time. Like, hey man, those giant stickers, because they pay contingency. Yep. But how does take us back? Like, when do you start getting into motorcycles? Even like, where do you live? Where do you grow up? And how do you get into motorcycles?
So my uncles raced as a they were into racing. My mom
in SoCal here
in SoCal. Okay. Yeah. Vince Clark, 1977, was the national number of 44.
Oh,
he got
okay. third
place at Hangtown in, in 1977, I think it was. So that was Vince. So
okay, that's your uncle.
Yeah, one of my uncles. Yeah, and so my uncles got me into it. Unfortunately, mom divorced. We moved back to Missouri. Mm. So I didn't ride much as a kid. You know, you'd ride. We didn't have much money, and you know, not feel all sorry for me. You know, we didn't live terrible, but not enough to ride much. So if I did have a bike running, it would last for 6 months, and then you're down for a year.
Yeah,
you know, it's like, you know, coming from off an 85, then you're gonna okay. Now it's broken. Okay, I get a 125. You get a 120, a used 1985, you know, KX 125. Yeah. It's gonna last. You know, a used X race bike. You know, for $1,500, whatever it was. It's gonna last. You know, 3 months, and then the cylinder's ruined. And when a cylinder's ruined on one of those, there was no sending it out to replating around. You had to buy a new cylinder. Yep. You know, so
or bore it out, but
yeah, they were
Nickel back then. Okay,
electrofusion. Yeah, yeah. You know, in the Cowies. So that was the tough part. So once I graduated high school, I came back out here to California and started,
like by yourself, like moved out like as a kid. Yeah.
18
years old.
And then I was a machinist. That's what my trade. I learned. So that's what I was doing initially. That's one of the things.
What year is that?
So this isn't like 89,
okay.
88, 89 in there. So I come out to California. I'm working aerospace companies like in Ventura area, Oxnard.
Yep.
A lot of aerospace jobs. And then that's just stuff died. And I did end up taking worked for a few companies doing tool and die making and machinist stuff. And I still have my machinist box.
Yeah.
You know, that I.
So you can get on a lathe tomorrow and rip it up?
I thought when I started working in this industry, I figured I'd be going back to machining at any time.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
And but never have. So I was able to, you know, keep this going. But
when you moved back, did you get a bike? You're like, I'm rediscovering my love of moto.
Yeah. 91 was the first year I bought.
Okay.
I bought a 91 RM250.
Okay.
Okay.
The ugly ones.
They look ugly now.
No, they were ugly back then.
No, they were. They were not.
Stop it.
That design is so cool. You know, the camo. Was it blue and yellow mix going across?
It's
gold.
So you're going to Paris, you're going to Lemon Grove and all that places up that back then?
So we'd be all over. Paris was a popular one because it was so close to where I lived down in Sun City, Menifee area. So Paris was great, and that's where, you know, Goat ran it back then, and the dirt was amazing, and that was a really cool time in the 90s. And then, so at that time, that's when I convinced Wisco they needed somebody.
Okay. How did you get into Wisco though? Like literally,
it took like a year.
Did you have a connection there, or you just literally I'm Jay Clark, I could help you?
So they had a warehouse in Santa Paula up by Ventura, and I knew the guy there.
Okay.
Okay. So I talked to him, and I'm like, man, you guys need someone. He goes, yeah, we do. And so he gave me some phone numbers. Mm. I would call Bob Gorman, who owns Cometic,
okay,
at Gasket, and I would call him for 6 or 8 months straight. I called him just. Every week I was calling him and going, hey, and because he showed some interest. He goes,
okay,
yeah, but this is, there's no internet. There's no, there's no nothing. Yeah.
This is like, if you want a Wisco piston, you ordered it on the back of an MXA and you put your credit card number on a piece of paper.
I faxed him a resume, you know, I mean, it was like, that was the extent of what you could really show, you know? So after bugging him for a long time, he calls me and goes, hey, can you be in Palm Springs in a couple hours? I'm like,
okay,
yeah, the owner, you know, Bob Anderson's going to be there.
Okay.
So you know, just being me and what I was, I threw a suit on, you know, and it was like May or, you know, it was hot. And I drive out to.
What are you doing then at this point for a living?
I was basically just working part time machinist stuff and
semi
unemployed. My wife was working full time and I was like struggling finding work. It was the only time I'd ever struggled. We just got married and I was struggling for about 9 or 12 months right in there.
I was
struggling to find anything decent.
So surprising you didn't, I guess back then though, too, it was simpler, but. like you could have went to Honda or Cowie or Suzuki and be like, hey, I can make parts.
Yeah, I didn't even think of this. Yeah, like it wouldn't and it wouldn't register that I could drive from Sun City to Torrance or whatever.
Yeah.
Like I didn't even know. I don't know if I really even knew that Torrance like Honda was in Torrance.
Are you going to Supercrosses as a fan?
Okay. I would go to some races. I like GFI would have the race and I would go to occasional Anaheim or whatever, But
Back to the suit.
To Weisco. Yeah, so I go out to meet the owners, Bob and Joanne Anderson. I meet them, and they're just like, they thought it was really cool that I was respectful and showed up like that. And they thought my technical background would be helpful in at least explaining pistons to people. I wouldn't be just like some guy that didn't know anything, that actually knew how to put a piston in, that kind of thing.
So you've always, with the machinist stuff, you've always done your own, you got into bike work,
you had
your
no bike maintenance, And, you know, breaking off a main jet in the carburetor when I was a kid, like that kind of stuff.
So my dad was a car mechanic. So he was like, hey, kid, we're going racing, but you're going to work on your bikes. And I'll teach you, but you're working on them. Like, I work on cars.
Yeah.
So that's, you know,
So that's how I had to learn. And so they flew me out like a week.
Okay.
Like 2 weeks later, they flew me out to Ohio to meet everybody and see if I could put something. And I fly out there. And I'm at the airport, and I call them, and I say, hey, they won't rent me a car because I'm not – I wasn't 25. You know, I was like 22, 22 or 23 or something. So they wouldn't rent me a car. Mm. So that was the first way of finding out that I wasn't quite equipped. So they go, we'll be right there.
Yeah. You
know, like an hour later, somebody shows up to pick me up and bring me in. So,
and where was it? Where was Weisco? Where were they?
Mentor, Ohio. Okay. So right outside of Cleveland.
Cleveland, okay.
Yeah, so you fly into Cleveland. And they were amazing. I worked for them for 11 years, 12 years, and then they sold.
And so you were back west – as a rep. So were you going to dealerships? I mean, like, stock Weisco? Or
a little bit. I would go to, like, White Brothers and Chaparral and different places that were kind of bigger.
Mm-hmm.
And if they needed, like, I would do, like, a seminar with the sales reps.
Okay.
Like, that kind of
Okay. So
I wouldn't stop by dealers too much, you know, just more the bigger things.
Well, Chaparral's a dealer.
Yeah.
Well, but
they, like, you know how they have the phone? Back then, they had a lot of phone people.
Yeah.
So I would go meet with their phone people and maybe set up a little contest.
So Dameron grinding you on prices.
Right.
Just grinding you.
Luckily, he didn't have to deal with me. So, yeah, there's people above me that were doing all that.
But, so basically, it's funny that this is the early 90s, and I did that job for FMF, Four Parts Unlimited, when I got out of the mechanicking thing, would go to dealers and put on a little demonstration and be like, this is why you should buy FMF.
Right.
That's one of my jobs, right? It was my job. So you're doing it in the early 90s.
Yeah. So that's what I would do. And then it grew into, we're like, hey, we could. And then I started with some connections. I would meet the race teams and stuff. And then at the time, no one was really building custom pistons for a lot of the race teams. So we got in with Bob Oliver and Yamaha, and Jeff Emig was there at the time. And then we start building them some pistons. And we build some for Honda and some for Kawasaki. When Jeff goes over to Kawasaki, then it's like there's a little in there. And we start dealing with those guys. And it
is
really,
this like flat top stuff or one ring stuff?
They would want special stuff. So going from a dome to a flat top a ring pin on center line so they can change up their porting and not have to worry about
sure.
That was a big deal because you couldn't go get a piston with a ring pin on center line. So this way we could make them one on center line and they were happy.
Yeah.
Because then
we didn't think about that, but yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Simple thing like that. That's all they needed.
Yeah.
And then
all the manufacturing was outside of Cleveland. Like everything was outside of Cleveland.
Everything was made there. And so they started doing a really good job through there and that really worked. Then as four strokes were coming in, I don't know that they were really equipped to hand, you know, they sold the company right in there, which was well played on their part.
Yeah.
Right. Because they were killing it with Banshee pistons.
I'm 51 years old.
Yeah.
I feel like, and this coincides with your employment, but yes, the 90s was a Weisco came on.
Yeah.
And it was like, I'd never heard of them before. I believe they used to make pistons for jets or something.
Go-karts.
Go-karts?
Yeah, that's where they started, yeah.
And I feel like there was a massive growth where everyone used Weisco in motocross world, you know? So.
And then four strokes came in and you didn't really need to change as much. And then it was a lot more technology involved and that really slowed things down. And when this gets into where I've run into some hiccups throughout the next, 20 years, let's say, or whatever it's been, is from these Weisco got sold, private equity, big nasty uncle, gets sold. And they bring in a bunch of people who don't know our sport at all. You know, it's like, if Pro Circuit or FMF got sold and Mitch and Donnie were gone, what would happen to those companies?
Yeah.
What would be the core of... It would not be about the same thing. It would just be about dollars and cents. It would just be about this making plan every quarter. Those things were tough. So left for a few years, did Dunlop and did a lot of other things.
Well, hold on. Let's back up.
Yeah.
Whose idea was it Did you go to every Supercross and Motocross?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like you were.
Yeah, for about 5 years.
Or whose so. Idea was that?
I guess mine, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you would go to the races. Did you set up a contingency program? Was that all you?
Yeah.
So it was a really good contingency program to use Wisco. You had to use a sticker on your front fork, fork guard. And they were everywhere. So
my wife helped. We'd get the reports after the race. We'd make up these whole reports of who's getting paid what and fax or then email them in to Wisco, Ohio. Yep. They would send out checks.
So really, not to pat yourself on the back, I guess, but you were a huge part of getting Wisco involved in motocross and supercross, huh?
It was a big deal. Yeah, and it was, but also at the time, I tell people, when I worked for, Bob Gorman and the Andersons and the Kips, the family that owned Wisco, they treated me so well. Mm-hmm. It gets hard. Sometimes I get all emotional, but they treated me so well that I just wanted to do everything I could. People would laugh. Why do you care so much about Wisco?
Dude, you did care.
Yeah.
Oh, I know, because I don't know if we had ever had it, you and I, but... I heard stories about you anyways. You passionately cared about Wisco. Just like John Knowles passionately cared about Scott Coggles. Right. You know what I mean? Yes, you were into it.
That was it. And they treated me really well for that. So they made me want to.
You made good money. You're making good money. Yeah.
For the time, I was I started at $500 a week. $500 a week, yeah. So it was like nothing. But they treated me really well, and it grew really quickly, and I was real happy with that. And it was more than I would have been making as a machinist, right? Within a few years.
Think about that. Putting on a suit to go to Palm Springs. It was kind of changed your life a little bit, right?
Right, right. Yeah, and my Toyota truck that didn't have AC.
Yeah. So did you like going to the races? Did you enjoy that part of it?
I did love it a lot.
And, a lot of work.
It was work. And then I started growing into where I was doing banners. I would work out deals with the different tracks, right? Mm-hmm. Especially the Nationals, at the National tracks. I would work out a deal with Beasley and with the Martins and so forth. And then I would go up and put banners.
Mm-hmm.
And then after a while, guys like Bevo and stuff would be all, just like you're talking about the magazines, he'd be all mad that I had more banners up than him. And I'm like, well, hey, I got here at 4:30. You can get here at 4:30 and go put up banners.
Bevo was a jerk off, by the way. I'm not a fan. Anyways.
Well, he just so you know, he pulled me aside one time after, it was at Hangtown.
Yeah.
And he told me that if I continued, that I would not work in this industry.
It's the kind of guy he thought.
Fully know that you will not continue to work in this industry. I'm going to talk to your. So he called up Wisco and everything. And so Wisco calls me. Hey, whatever you're doing right.
What an idiot, dude. That guy's such a loser. When I was doing the X brand goggle stuff for Rich Taylor, who I was just trying to make a living, man, building some goggles. And he was an asshole. And I used to consider him a friend.
Yeah.
And I would be like, dude, I'm just building some goggles. I'm just trying to get by here, man, and trying to provide Rich Taylor, who's a friend of mine, some service. And, him, so don't get me started.
And it's I don't hate other tire guys. Yeah, guys. But he would, he was mad because I was hustling and doing stuff. And it's and there's lots of older people.
I'm doing a good job and you're mad at me.
There's people there's in our sport, there's older people, especially who are resting on their laurels of what they did in the 70s or 80s, right? And so they're resting on their legend, right? Mm-hmm. And it's I was just hey, I'm going to work hard. And Wisco's like, hey, you're doing a good job.
Keep it up.
You keep doing it. And it is kind of cool. I open these magazines and they'll be James Stewart whipped over something. And there's a huge
Wisco
banner at Bud's Creek or wherever, right? It is pretty cool to still see it.
No, I think you did you were passionately involved from what I remember. You got into it with a few people over the years where I heard some stories. I don't think we ever did. But it was all because you were so protective of Wisco. You would have thought your last name was Jay Wisco. Do you know what I mean? But
there was tons of people that thought I was family. They go, are you part owner?
Yeah. You had the shirt on every weekend. Yeah. You had the stickers in your back pocket. Yeah. You had your clipboard. You made us, 99, I worked for Red Dog at Nolene. You made us single ring pistons for Supercross.
Right.
You didn't make them for us. But I remember either you came to me or Timmy or somebody and said, we got this piston that'll help you, have a little more rev, a little more lighter feeling, and you gave them to us. Yeah. So that was an example of you were like, I got something better.
Right.
Try this, and Timmy liked them. So.
And it was nice that Wisco was willing to step up and start making stuff. Cause I go, hey, I can throw all these stickers out here and banners and stuff, but we need to really have some good product.
Yeah.
And that's what was cool, that the product really stepped up during that time.
Yep.
Wasn't Seasco from the old days. Air-cooled engines were tough to make anything live.
Yeah.
And then you had
Wisco did have a tough time for a little while, right? Yeah. At some point.
Yeah. So it was nice to help be a part of rebuilding that brand recognition and trust in the brand. And so that was really cool to see happen throughout the years.
Yeah, absolutely. I work with the Weisco guys now on Pulp Show, and I deal with Kevin, and he's a great guy. And
yeah,
seems like they're back on track or trying to make good product again. They work with Honda, you know, those guys building custom stuff for Honda and everything else. Yeah, great job at Weisco over the years, for sure, for you. And then their company grew big, I would guess. So are you still doing dealer calls or chaparral calls and things like that back then? Or is that kind of done because sales are taking off?
Yeah, I was still doing that. I would still go visit the Western Power Sports. I would go up there for a sales meeting, you know, when they would have the
MVP stuff and all that.
Yeah, but now most of the stuff back east – that the people out of Ohio would go take care of.
Okay.
If it was anything out west, White Brothers or Western Power Sports or some of their small distributors in Southern California, I would try to go help them. Yeah, they would try to keep it cost effective.
Yep.
Hey, that guy's out there. He can go visit them and kind of thing. So
was there something that you did at Weisco pushed for, that a race team used that you were stoked on that really worked well, like maybe the center pin thing?
The center pin and the single ring stuff for all the 250s. And then – IMG winning championships with the Pistons was cool. You know, that was really nice. And then seeing the ramifications from that, when we would have a Weisco, little tiny Weisco sticker on the cylinder head, we'd have it there. It was on the cylinder, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Japanese came over at the first races and they were fuming. Okay, they wanted it off the cylinder because that was a personal attack on Kawasaki, like on their name. So we compromised and moved it up to the head. Like that was like they were somewhat semi okay with that one.
Yeah.
Right. It could be up here, but not down here. So, and then within 2 or 3 years, they were making them. Then, you know, Kawasaki Japan was making them race pistons.
Oh, yeah.
So that's what started to happen.
Yeah.
Is we woke up a lot of that. And that's what happened also with the Nationals. You know, one of the things, you know, good or bad, one of the things I accomplished, I feel like in some ways, it helped open up the eyes of, you know, Coombs's and all the promoters of what kind of coverage was out there. You know, I'm coming in and paying a track, you know, $1,000 for the weekend, right?
For banners.
And I had banners all over. And I just looked at where the TV towers were, and I looked down there and looked down there.
Oh,
and
you would do that, huh? Yeah.
And then I just go put a banner over here, banner over here. And I would do about 50 banners at a track.
Okay.
On a weekend. I would go put them all up. And then what happened? That's when they made the
really guerrilla marketing kind of.
Then they made the National Promoters Group, and that's what started unifying the Nationals.
Yeah.
And then it got a lot more. Then they started bringing things into where you can't just sponsor one track.
Yeah,
you
can't have Jay running around for $1,000 putting.
Yeah,
banners.
So you need to sponsor. You need to sponsor the whole series and this and that. So hey, things change, but and when the opportunity's there, you know, against Bevo's best advice, if the opportunity's there, I'm going to do it.
Yeah,
you know, and that's. And, you know, wasn't doing anything wrong or illegal.
Right.
So we're just going to.
So the Weisco family really appreciated this, and their sales grew and things were rolling. They sell. You leave. What do you do?
I go, you know, I'm still working now. Now I'm working for Dunlop, you know, with the last year or so I was there. So I was already started with doing some stuff with Dunlop.
Okay. So you started your sort of project bike build stuff? Okay.
Yeah. And I was doing, you know, that's when things were growing a little bit to where you could go, hey, you could really make. Mm-hmm. You know, project.
Is this something that you had to pitch Paul Buckley at? Paul Buckley?
Mike
Buckley.
Yeah.
Is it like you had to come up with this idea?
Yeah. And Brock was a big part of bringing me on board. Mm-hmm. And he saw what I was doing with Weisco, obviously. And I was using Dunlop already, obviously. And so I had a good relationship with the guys. And so it was just like, hey, we need someone out. And at the time, Dunlop wasn't dominating racing as they were. You know, Bridgestone had majority of the top teams, you know. They had, you know, Stewart and, you know, not McGrath, but Stewart
Reed.
You know, a lot of the, they had a lot of those teams then during that time. So,
yeah, Shapinski did a good job. Doug, speaking of people who are passionate about their brand, Doug Shapinski back then for Bridgestone,
And they were, you know, seeming pretty hard on it. And so what I was able to accomplish on the media side was really beneficial for Dunlop at the time. So maybe they were winning with Carmichael, right?
Yeah.
But beyond that, it wasn't as much, you know.
Jay Clark here, Fly Racing Racer X podcast. I want to thank the folks at Brunt Workwear, the Omen boot, the Marin boot, no break-in needed, easy to put on, different colors available as well. If you're a real working man like Jay, you know, you're in a shop changing tires and you're dropping things on your feet, you need Omen or Marin work boots from bruntworkwear.com. Code PulpMXShow to save with those guys. And also I want to thank the folks at Renthal.com. Please check those guys out. Of course, Honda HRC, Monster Energy Kawasaki, Red Bull KTM. They got a direct-to-consumer site now, $99 for Renthal. Sprockets as well on board. Check out Renthal.com, Max's Tires, of course, as well, and the folks at Motorsport.com. Okay, so race replica tires, I was going to ask you about for Dunlop. Mm-hmm. I feel like that was a great idea. They were expensive. They wore out, and we're not doing that anymore.
No.
Yeah, like, yeah. Like it just, you know, hey, be careful what you wish for, consumer. If you want a tire that the racers run, we'll sell it to you. Oh, wait, it wears out really fast.
Right. And tires are so tough. And then with a company like Dunlop that's that big and has the distribution and dealer network that mm-hmm. it has, I think when that tire trickles down to the dealer mm-hmm. in small area and he doesn't sell it with that warning, the guy goes and rides it on his farm field on hard pack, right? And the front tire tears knobs off and, you know, in 5 hours, he's just like, he's totally bummed. He goes, my rear tire's not even worn out. My front tire's, you know, chunked off, whatever. So, those are downsides of a race replica type tire.
And then,
when they did it again with the factory edition tires, they sold them only to KTM Group.
Okay.
Bought them all.
Oh, did they? Okay, I didn't know that.
So Husky, GasGas, KTM, they bought them all, and you have to buy them from those dealers.
So that's how they. So they are still out there, just from KTM.
A different version
dealers.
Now there's a different version, and it's not nearly as prone to that kind of excessive wear.
Yeah.
For sure.
Okay.
But you still would want it. Still needs to be ridden on an intermediate type. Terrain. Yeah. These aren't hard packed tires, and that's one of the downsides.
Okay, so I feel like I fucking spend 40% of my time on my show is talking about this goddamn scoop tire and scoop or non-scoop and all this, and I'm sure you're well aware of it on the world and Eli Tomac and all of this stuff.
Yeah.
I hate it.
Yeah.
But I'm sure it's trickled into Dirt Bike TV and your magazine world a little bit on scoops, right?
Yeah. I am full-time scoop.
Okay, you're a scoop guy. Okay.
And I get mad because I'm now passionate about Dunlop, right? Yeah. I only want it called MX-14. I don't want it called scoop, because we're not giving proper credit to where credit's due.
Well, Pirelli started the scoop.
Right.
In Europe.
For sure.
Yes.
And you know what percentage of those racers run that Pirelli scoop. They run it in conditions like in Italy that are questionable.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like some of those tracks they run it on, you're like, that's just like you questioning. Now some of the places Tomac's running it are more questionable.
It's insane, right? Yeah, right.
But I run it full time now. People, because I ride Glen Helen mainly, mm-hmm. or hill tracks, those types of things. So when I go to Glen Helen, I'm pretty much done by 11 a.m.
Yeah.
And so people, because they ask me how does it feel in the afternoon motos, and I go, I don't know.
I'm gone, or I'm hanging out.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So I like to ride from 9 to 11.
Yeah,
is the window.
I'll tell you what, I went to Glen Helen. You were there. Mm-hmm. 3-4 weeks ago, I got there early. It was nobody there. It was prepped, and it was so good, dude.
Yeah, it was Tuesday, maybe.
I think it was a Tuesday.
It was amazing.
And it was one of the best days I've ever had riding. Yep. It was smooth ish.
Yep.
And I loved it, dude. Yep. I kept telling people, I'm like, this is amazing.
Yeah.
Anyways, so you're a scoop guy.
Yes. Full time.
When you talk to other people about it, it's more, and when you talk to people at the races, it's more than the pattern. It's also sidewall feel and everything else that these guys like.
And this is another thing, as far as I think it's even more beneficial for slower old guys,
mm-hmm.
because we're not carrying tons of corner speed, right?
Yeah.
We're stop and
go,
point and shoot kind of thing. Yeah. So you're boom, go. So I don't think we're relying on that side, bite traction. And so when you can get that drive, especially a track like Glen Helen, where you have this huge straightaway and going into Talladega, mm-hmm. and then you have these huge uphills, and then the sand sections, you have so many places on the track where it's positive
mm-hmm.
that the 20% of the track, the 80%, it's epic, right? And
then
20%, maybe it's harder in the flatter turns. You're fine. You deal with it. And so it's such a positive on the other ones. It's amazing.
It seems like it's all the rage. And I think we're just going to – they get off the grate better too, I guess.
Yes.
So
yes.
I think we're going to see these idiots in racing all run them. You know what I mean?
It's definitely going to wear out. It's like at supercross tracks. It's going to wear out supercross tracks quicker, which is an issue for supercross tracks.
I have – Max has got me a scoop for my Loretta's regional at Paula. And, dude, I pulled great starts. And I'm telling you, it wasn't me. It was this tire. The tire was great. It was just straight line stuff.
Yep.
No matter what, your scoop pattern, you're hooking up. You know what I mean? So, I'm just tired of hearing about it on the pro race where the riders are like, I didn't go to the scoop. That's why I got sixth. And you're like, all right, cool. Right.
And it started where they had to run it for qualifying because of the qualifying times.
Deep, yeah.
So they had to run it there. And then it's like, well, we have to keep it on for the first moto for the start, because it's ripped in front of the start.
Yeah.
So, I don't know what to take of it. I don't see how you can make a change or a ban or whatever, you know, because then it'd be like how high it can, how high or how scooped it can be, what kind of shit. Because our AT82 is the new
Enduro tire or whatever.
Yeah. And, it,
and you can flip that, right?
You can flip it. You can run it with a straight edge out front. It's more of the hard pack, and you can have a little scoop pattern. And there's even some pros that, that the
Tomac ran in Vancouver last year.
And the front's really amazing. Lawrence Brothers have run the front a decent amount.
Okay.
The front's really a good front. Works really well in a lot of conditions, and the rear has that scoop to it that's in between.
Yep.
So there's actually some positives to a tire that was really designed to be a more of an off-road trail tire.
How much do you again? Like you're deep into racing in the '90s and whatever 2000s with Wisco. Do you have anything to do with racing now? Really? Like, do you have, like,
no.
I mean, you're just a fan? Like, you're just
super fan.
I mean, you talk to Brock or whoever, and, you know, you have all your contacts.
No, but, yeah.
But, nothing to do.
No,
yeah.
No, nothing. I don't help with any of the sponsorships or anything like that, which is, in some way, just such a huge relief. It was so much less stress and work. And, and then you were asked about the racing. When I was going to the races for a long time, I loved it. After the first kid, okay.
Yeah.
Second kid, it's like, not so much okay, and then we have three kids, and by the time we had our third kid, that was in 01. By then, I was pretty much got real quickly like, hey, I would rather just stay home. And then, and I know what really did it was 9/11 was a big trigger, not just the hey, I'm scared of flying into a building, but you know, flying became very difficult.
Security and everything else,
it was a hassle. Before 9/11, I would show up at you know, McGrath and Emig would all fly out of everybody flew out of Ontario, and just going and checking in with them, I would get upgraded 3/4 of the time just with American stickers we'd have in our little book. And so you flew first class most of the time. And if you didn't, you had a row to yourself in the back in on these flights. So flying
You could also show up 30 minutes before your flight.
Gosh,
you know what I mean?
Yeah. Like you could be yelling. They'd hold the gate for you. You call it the front. You checked in on the front. Mr. Clark, we'll hold the gate for you. All the time.
Yeah.
So it was just... Flying was so much less hassle and stressful before 9/11, and so I sound like this old guy talking.
No, you're
about,
right. Yeah,
but it was way better before then, and so after those couple years after, I was just like, hey, this sucks.
Not fun.
And it got way less flights out of Ontario. I was flying all kinds of places, and it just became to where out of Ontario I couldn't fly to anywhere, so I'd have to go to Orange County or to somewhere else to go find a better flight. So I just grew to where I started to really hate it, and then at that point. And so since I would say 02, 03, somewhere in there, I didn't really go much anymore.
If someone's listening to this and they want to get involved with you and the Project Builds and Dirt Bike TV and all that, you just contact you?
Contact on our, you know, Instagram, we have a website,
dirtbiketv1.com,
and there's a contact right there. And it's simple.
I'm guessing changing tires is the number one thing you hear from people who want help. We can't do it.
Yeah.
Like,
is
that the number one thing?
Yeah. And so we, you know, we have with the videos we show with building your own tire stand and also having the proper tools.
So you're a fan of the tire stand?
Yes.
I just do on the ground.
Right. And then once you get on a tire, like if you look at the guys at the Dunlop truck doing that every weekend or whatever truck, you got to be standing up. You can't be on your hands and knees the whole
time.
So it's not practical long term. And then one thing I find for good success in doing tires as far as being consistent is being consistent in how you do it every time, and then you're not.
Do you use a bead buddy? Are you a bead buddy guy? Okay,
yeah,
I've never used one.
Oh my gosh! Yeah. So use those, and
I put the one in, and then I just kind of put my knee there, and then work around it. Do you know what I mean? Like I probably could use a bead buddy.
But. Yeah, 77's over, man.
Yeah, I guess. I also have from my KTM days. I took the Motion Pro tire irons, got 4 of them. Cut them in half and extended them. And got Chuck Warren down in San Diego to weld a little thing on there. And now I have super long Motion Pro that I love.
Yep.
Problem is you take too much of a bite and I have pinched.
Yeah.
Because they're so you're so long, you have so much leverage. You're like, I can take this much.
And some guys will actually tear sidewalls and break the bead of the tire.
Yeah.
So you got to be careful.
Yeah. And then I've done a couple of mooses in my day. Just hated it.
Yeah.
Watched you do one a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
And I'm like, fuck, like, that's pretty good, man. It's pretty quick for a moose.
And I don't do them very often.
Yeah.
But
you were good at it,
There's lots of, you know, people like Brian at Dunlop Truck. He just knocks them out like that. Now, the mooses he does do on the ground, on the stand that just sits on the ground. He still likes to do them that way.
Yeah.
Most of the guys don't.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an art to getting one on quick, you know?
Right.
Like, it's a real, dude, I hated it. I had to do a few of them.
Yeah.
Just struggled the whole time. Dirt Bike TV, Jay Clark here. All right. Well, did we miss anything? Did we get everything?
No, I think we're pretty good. It's,
yeah,
it's pretty awesome to, you know, be able to work in this industry this long.
Yeah,
you know, 32 years I think it is at range, and to be able to do it, I never would have guessed it would be this long. And it's and I love it.
Yeah,
I mean, it's an awesome deal, and I'm a big fan of the sport as far as the racing and all that.
Mm-hmm.
I hate the injury side of it, you know, that part of it, and then especially the serious injury side of it.
Yeah, we just had Jerry Robin go down, you know, this last Supercross season. Yeah, no,
just some terrible things out there, and but the best part, I still love riding.
Mm-hmm.
And I,
what do you ride? What's your personal bike?
I go through a few.
Oh, okay.
But the 350 XCF mm-hmm. on off road, which I try to ride at least once a month trail riding mm-hmm. Up in Utah or Wyoming, Idaho, yep. Colorado. We try to go on some bigger trips, and so try to do that as often as we can. And then for moto, 250Fs, just that Yamaha 250, the KTM brand 250s. Yep. I like those on the track a lot.
So you yourself get bikes from OEMs?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah. I didn't know how that worked. Yeah.
Get you know, so work with some great companies and try to get them some good coverage on the bikes. We have a Honda 450 RX right now. That's really nice. I like the dual sports too.
Yeah.
I have some KTM brand. I got some Gas 500s.
You done any Stark stuff?
No.
You ridden one?
No, I think they're too much against Jay Clark, like as far as like the brands. You know, I work for too many engine parts.
Sure.
Yeah. So we need to probably, you know.
You gotta try one though.
Yeah.
I mean, just go ride one, low key.
Now, one of the problems I have is that I am being a lifetime novice and stuck where I am. The bit that I've ridden electric bikes around is I know I'm going to be, anything new. It's the same reason I don't like to hardly ride someone else's bike.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm very cautious on what I ride and where because, as we know, it's very dangerous and it's easy to get hurt.
Yeah.
And I don't want to get hurt on doing something stupid. It's like I don't pick up a basketball and go shoot because I'm going to turn an ankle.
Yeah, yeah.
If I try.
So you're saying you don't want to get on 80 horsepower Stark?
No, I don't want to get, even if it was 60 horsepower, 50 horsepower. It's like anything different is hard. Like it.
Yeah, but you just got to try one, man. We'll put it at 40 horsepower and you got to go try it.
There's some versions and people are trying to make. I really want something with a clutch.
Okay.
That you can modulate power.
Yeah.
I feel like that's going to be helpful to a guy mm-hmm. like me. I mean, I use the clutch too much. I get that as a novice, but
mm-hmm.
it's a helpful tool to help you modulate power.
Sure.
That I think is important.
Well, you get in trouble.
Yeah.
Okay, pull it in. Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, you know.
And I think that's something that's going to be lost on an electric bike. I mm-hmm. think that's hard. From what I saw of Yamaha's version they're working on, it has a clutch.
Yeah.
So we'll see if that ever.
Yeah, I don't know what the plan is with that. I saw the same thing that dropped at EICMA, but I don't know what the plan is for that for sure. I know the Honda one. There's no plan to release the Honda one.
Right.
And I'm just like, wait, what? They developed the whole frame for it and everything?
Yeah.
I'm like, you guys are going to do all this work and not release it, but we'll see what happens. I think also testament to you created something. There was nobody doing what you do. And maybe there is now. Do you have any competitors? Do you have any copycats?
Not really. There's been a few over the years who've tried.
Have there? Okay.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't, you know.
Yeah, you're not Bevoing them?
No, I don't. That's a good term. I don't Bevo anybody who's doing it. I want everybody to be able to, you know, I'm not going to affect somebody's, you know, food bowl, right?
Like,
if somebody's trying to make a living, they're going to do it. But a lot of them find out that it's pretty hard to put something together and keep it going this long.
Yeah, I think, the ultimate compliment for you is you've literally created a niche that wasn't there and it's been 20 years and you're still doing it and doing it successfully. And like, that's kind of like a really cool, you know, thing, like I think, right. So congrats on that. And you know, it's done well, for you. And, I think that's really neat that you've done this thing.
Well, I appreciate it. Yeah. It's been good. And, I think yourself included, there's lots of people in our sport who've done that. You're like, who've been able to create things that didn't exist before.
Well, I didn't create anything. I just started a podcast, but, you know, whatever.
But I don't think when you started it, I don't think anybody would have anticipated, first of all, that it could go into 600 shows or whatever.
Yeah.
And to actually be a viable business. And
that's probably true. Yeah, you're right about that.
For sure. Like, I don't think anyone would have guessed that. I think it would have been like, oh, that's a nice little cult thing.
Yeah.
Like,
I've had some old crusty magazine guys over the years tell mutual friends, like, does he make a living doing that?
Right.
Like, how do you make any money? You know what I mean? And I'm like, yeah, actually, he does make a living at it. And so they can't quite, crusty magazine guys can't quite get their heads around it. But
won't accept that's a thing. And
and
that there's different ways to advertise than just the other thing. There's different venues. And everybody wants to advertise in different ways. And that's one thing we're able to do is I don't have to be so guerrilla marketing as I was back then.
Yeah.
Nowadays.
Yeah.
when I give a tech tip on something, whether it's chain of sprockets or whatever it is, I can work in these companies without, you know, with it being natural.
I hate
to use the cliches of organic, but
no, absolutely. I mean,
working then.
That's what Yamaha wants for me. They don't want me to talk about torn organic stuff where I love my bike and I love riding, and I do, you know what I mean?
Right.
So that's what they like. Also, though, does it, and I don't, maybe this sounds cheesy, but I enjoy this a little bit. I went on a rant the other show about my DMs.
Yeah.
But the good part about my DMs is that I do, and, you know, this is cheesy, but people are like, hey, my dad had cancer and I was at the hospital and your show gave me comfort.
Yes.
Hey, I drive to work every day and I love your show and it really makes my wife loves it now, blah, blah, blah. And that's a really nice feeling. So flipping around, like you must get people who are like, dude,
thank you for that.
I'd never changed a clutch before, and I was scared, and I watched your video.
Like, I got goosebumps right now because you said that, and it's like,
okay, yeah.
Because we get almost weekly, I get one of those that's really touching that way, and I've had some that are just amazing. A guy that's, he has terminal cancer. He knows he's dying, and he's asking me what bikes to buy. Like, he's gonna live out, and things like that are like. You know, and then he writes me back showing pictures of him
with that bike
and stuff.
Yeah.
And it's like, this guy only has whatever time left, and he's going to enjoy it on this bike that I suggest to him. You know, he had it between a few different bikes. And he's like, and he's so happy with the bike that he got. And there's lots of these types of stories, and it really is pretty cool. And it does help me feel good about humanity and our country.
Because
and
sometimes things. You get depressed. Yes.
Sure. I don't watch the news, you know, and, you know, and I have certain views on things, but at the end of the day, things are so can if you let it absorb your head, it can be very depressing. So it is really nice, not just to get competent, because, and like you said about the DM thing, what's really nice on my side of things is if for some reason 90%+ of my comments are always very positive, right? If for some reason there is a negative comment, what's really nice is that I don't ever. First of all, I don't ever comment or like. My daughter is the one that likes and will respond to those. Okay, that's her. Everybody has a little task.
Yeah,
and it's like I'm not. But I have seen where. The other followers will self-moderate and take care of that. So if someone says something negative, usually there's five guys that just go and defend, hey, this guy's doing this for, you know, for this for free or for you or whatever.
Yep.
And he, you know, and we'll just light him up and I don't have to worry about it. So it takes care of itself most of the time.
Like my wife gets depressed. She's a very casual news hearer.
Yes.
So she doesn't follow it, but she'll hear something and she'll get really depressed about the state of the world or this is happening or this is getting cut or whatever. And I'm like, I understand that. I said, but I have so much. I mean, we just got back from Australia.
Yeah.
And there were people that were so happy to meet me.
Yeah.
They're grown men that were like shaking. Because I'm like, I ever go to Australia.
Right.
And she was like, wow, like you really made some of those people's days, you know? And I'm like, I know I'm an idiot. You live with me.
Yes.
And Kiefer knows I'm an idiot, but these guys don't. So let's just keep that myth going that I'm somebody special. But she was like, wow, that's really awesome. Like, that's the stuff you got to focus on, like meeting these nice people that appreciate what you're doing. Do you know what I mean?
No, and that's exactly what I come across too. And I don't go to a lot of tracks, but when I do, if I go to things, definitely a lot of people coming up, especially like when there's a World Vets or something, people are coming over from other countries and saying hi and wanting pictures and stuff. And it's really fun. And I just try to keep it within there. Obviously, we're a speck of fame, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But it's nice that they appreciate what we're doing. They're not enamored with who we are, but they appreciate that we're bringing them something they like see, listen to.
And let's face it, like Dunlop and Weisco and Recluse and these companies you work with, you're not telling the guy how to adjust his chain to sell Weisco. You're doing that to help people.
Yeah.
Like it's all the side benefit of getting your company's exposure and doing all that and growing your business. But at the end of the day, your tech tips are just like, hey, man, let me try to help you.
Right.
Let me try to help you. There's nothing really in it for you. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. That's what we're hoping for. And,
right.
And if there's a little bit of advertising that goes beneath the service,
sure.
Then it's there.
Right.
I mean, I have to pay the bills too. And that's what we're looking to do. And most people and nowadays people really understand that. I mean, I get people write me and they want to Venmo me. And I'm like, no, if we help them with a question, no.
Yeah.
I have a little thing. I email them. Here, you can support these brands. Here's some discount
codes.
You don't need to send me any money.
I mean,
we've had that quite often and they want us, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's not necessary.
Yeah.
So we just support these companies we work with and that's great. And if not, that's fine too. It's no problem.
Yeah. So. It's that's the side of where where I get, you know, some rider's mad at me or some wife and girlfriend is mad at me. And I'm like, ah, fuck. But then you read these messages or you meet these people and you're like, cool, man. Like, I'm glad you really enjoyed that show. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, I had fun doing it, laughing with my friends about something, and I'm glad you enjoyed it, you know? And ultimately, that's what you're trying to do, is just trying to help people stay entertained.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And you're trying to help people, you know, basic maintenance on their motorcycle to help them enjoy dirt bike riding more. You know?
Yeah, yeah, so. And hopefully, because we can't cover everything, right? But it's to give them some confidence to go do it on their own.
Yeah,
I look at it like, hey, if I can do it, anybody can do it. I really do feel that way because I'm not
really
special.
Man, you've been in it for a long time. I mean, come on.
Yeah. But I paid attention and and like, you know, you have a bit of a cheat code because you were a mechanic for many years, right?
Yeah.
So you learned this all organically as you started with smaller races, right?
Doing or Bob Oliver taught me a lot. You know what I mean? Yeah. Yeah.
That's when you started doing your first bottom ends, right?
Yeah.
Four stroke, right?
Yeah.
Like legit work, you know.
And dinoing Bob. Gothic Jay taught me how to work a lathe, you know, and a mill, you know, because he knew it a little bit. So yeah, I didn't know it until I learned some stuff.
That's awesome.
So So congratulations on building this business and this niche. Also, thank you for not bevoing anybody. That's also a nice thing you do. So please check it out, dirtbiketv.com.
DirtBikeTV1.
Sorry. Yep. DirtBike. Did you lose the? Was there
somebody? they want to sell to me for like 10 grand. And I'm like, no, we're good. We're good.
Okay. DirtBikeTV1.com. Yeah. Follow him on Instagram. It's also a good follow on that as well. And good job, man, Jay. Thank you for the time today. Really appreciate it. Shout out to Racetech again for letting us use these offices.
Yeah,
that's
awesome.
Fly Racing RacerX podcast. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Thank you.
This has been the Fly Racing Steve Mathis Show, presented by Maxxis Tires, Renthal, Motorsport.com, and Kuba Links on RacerXOnline.com. Thanks for listening and supporting our partners.